Welcome to Hacker News Daily, a podcast from Bree. I'm Mia.
And I'm Milo. Today, parents paid over $800,000 for an experimental brain gene editing therapy for their daughter. She died during the procedure.
More than 30 U.S. startup founders and investors are urging the Trump administration not to ban or restrict access to Chinese AI models.
And major AI companies are reportedly keeping staggering amounts of debt off their balance sheets. Let's get into it.
We're starting with an exclusive report from Science Magazine about a gene editing trial in China, and the story is deeply troubling.
A couple paid more than $800,000 for a never-before-tried brain gene editing therapy for their young daughter. She died during that trial, and her death was not made public.
This was a first-in-human brain gene therapy, and commenters in the discussion are highlighting something important. Researchers and doctors appeared to downplay the enormous risks.
Right. And there's a specific damning detail here. Similar immune-mediated side effects had already shown up in earlier monkey experiments. Those warning signs were apparently ignored before moving ahead in humans.
One comparison being drawn is to the TGN-1412 drug trial. That's the infamous case where patients suffered severe immune reactions and nearly died. The parallel is pretty stark.
The implication is hard to miss. In both cases, there were signals that something could go catastrophically wrong, and the trials went forward anyway. A child is dead, and the public didn't know.
Now to a different kind of pressure campaign. More than 30 U.S. startup founders and investors are urging the Trump administration not to ban or restrict access to Chinese open-weight AI models.
This is according to a letter organized by the lobby group Little Tech and reported by Politico. The argument is pretty direct. Cutting off those models would hurt American innovation.
And the reason is that a lot of U.S. startups depend on freely available foreign open-weight releases just to build products and do research.
The letter goes further. It warns that a broad prohibition could actually push critical AI development work outside the United States. That would end up strengthening Chinese influence over global AI standards while doing very little to improve national security.
So, what are they asking for instead? The founders want the government to focus enforcement on known bad actors, not impose blanket technical restrictions.
It's a narrower, more targeted approach. And it's coming from the people who are actually building with these models day to day.
Sticking with AI, there's a fascinating financial story here. According to reporting from Futurism, major AI companies are keeping a staggering amount of debt off their balance sheets.
They're doing it through a financing technique called synthetic leasing. Here's how it works. A shell company, or a special purpose vehicle, takes out loans to build data centers and then leases the finished facility back to the AI firm.
Because those long-term lease obligations get treated as operating expenses instead of debt, the massive capital costs never show up on the company's official books.
Which means the public-facing balance sheets look a lot healthier than they really are. It masks just how leveraged these companies have become.
And there's an interesting debate happening around whether this bet even pays off. One commenter pointed out that if large language model efficiency improves enough, these expensive data centers could become obsolete, calling it a huge gamble.
But someone pushed back on that. Historically, increasing resource efficiency in areas like coal, oil, and photovoltaics has encouraged even more usage, not less. More efficiency drives more demand.
Then a further response added some nuance. The economics right now are distorted because token prices are so heavily subsidized and disconnected from actual cost. Efficiency gains play a lesser role in that environment.
And that same commenter drew a really specific distinction. Comparing this to photovoltaics isn't accurate. Solar panels are primary energy-producing infrastructure that generate their own fuel and are vertically integrated into their own supply chain. Leased AI data centers don't share that dynamic at all.
Lastly, the International Mathematical Union has quietly published the 2026 Fields Medal winners. The page was inadvertently posted early, revealing the recipients before any official announcement.
Yeah. someone hit publish too soon. And in the discussion around this, some folks are making a pretty striking observation.
They're saying this might be the last time pure humans win the prize. By 2030, large language models could be co-authors on winning results.
That's the longer-term signal. The short-term one is simpler. Watch for when the IMU officially confirms the medalists listed on that accidentally published page.
If the names match, we'll know the leak was real. If they change, there's going to be a whole different set of questions. DARPA and the U.S. Air Force have flown an AI-controlled F-16 inches, a real flight demonstration.
This is not a simulation. The announcement, published on the DARPA website, confirms that an artificial intelligence system actually piloted the fighter jet in the air.
They put the AI in the cockpit and let it fly the plane. That is a very different thing from running software on the ground.
Right. And the fact that DARPA and the Air Force chose to disclose this publicly, with a detailed report on the DARPA site, signals confidence in what they have achieved so far.
The announcement is framed as a demonstration. They showed that the system can do it, but they have not released full technical details on exactly how the AI made decisions in flight.
And that is the part that tends to spark debate. The demonstration proves capability, but the operational boundaries, the safety guardrails, those questions are still wide open.
What we know is that it happened. The AI took control of a fighter jet, flew it, and DARPA and the Air Force are now talking about it publicly.
It is worth noting that DARPA has been working on this for years under various autonomy programs. This flight is a milestone in that longer arc.
And it arrives at a moment when the broader conversation about AI and autonomous weapons is only getting louder.
Which means the questions about this demonstration are not just technical. They are policy questions too. And those are not answered by a flight test alone. Speaking of policy questions, a member of OpenAI's policy staff, Dean Ball, posted a series of tweets that one Hacker News commenter called incendiary stuff about OpenAI policy.
The commenter characterized Ball's posts as picking fights with Trump administration officials. That is the framing from the discussion, not a verified news report, but it is how observers on Hacker News read it.
And that reading led to some speculation in the same thread that OpenAI may feel secure in its standing with the administration. Again, that is commenter speculation, not something OpenAI has stated.
The linked article in that thread is titled, "The Arguments Against Open Source AI Are Bad." So the discussion sits right at the intersection of open weight models, closed AI, and government relationships.
One commenter made the case that the only good arguments against open weight AI also apply to closed AI. Their point was that the box is open and nobody can stop it.
That is a pretty strong position. It says the dividing line people try to draw between open and closed models collapses under its own logic.
Another participant pushed back, sort of. They suggested a large enough social movement could make AI taboo. But that reply was cut off mid-sentence, so we do not have their full argument.
So the conversation is fragmented, but the themes are clear. There is tension around what OpenAI policy staff say publicly, and there is a live debate about whether open-weight models can be contained even in principle.
And both of those threads, the DARPA flight and the open-source AI debate, share a common question. When a technology is already in the air, literally or figuratively, what does policy actually achieve?
Let's move to a different kind of policy failure. A Hacker News user who had been a Namecheap customer for 13 years says the company handed over his account to an unverified third party simply because they asked on a phone call.
Here is what happened. The user registered a .com domain for a college club under his own name, address, and phone number. When the club went through a leadership transition, the incoming lead wanted DNS changes.
Instead of contacting the user, the new lead initiated a password reset using the domain name. The user saw this and immediately filed a support ticket, saying, "I did not initiate this."
Namecheap called the user to verify he had filed the ticket. That sounds like a good step, right? But then they sent a canned email with tips like, "Check your antivirus software."
Meanwhile, the club lead kept pushing. He called Namecheap support and convinced them the domain really belonged to his club.
And here is the part that is hard to understand. With no further verification or validation, Namecheap changed the user's password and the email address on his account.
No confirmation from the original registered owner. No identity document. The account was simply handed over because someone was persuasive on the phone.
13 years of being a customer, and the verification process collapsed at a single phone call. That is the user's account, and it has generated significant discussion on Hacker News about what account security even means at a domain registrar.
And the stakes are high. Losing control of a domain means losing control of email, websites, and potentially other services tied to that identity.
Namecheap has not publicly responded in that thread with a detailed explanation. The story stands as one user's report of a policy breakdown that other commenters find alarming.
We close on something more reflective. A Hacker News commenter asked what the point of publishing online is anymore if you do not hope to become an influencer.
Their argument was that the nature of the game has changed and now does everything possible to discourage it. The platforms, the algorithms, the pressure to perform.
Someone replied that the same could be said about publishing offline. People do not stop writing in notebooks just because there is no audience.
Their point was that people can always do it simply because they enjoy it, and one or two others might find some enjoyment or utility in it. It does not have to matter or influence anyone.
They called it fine as a relatively solitary practice, and that seemed to land with people.
A third commenter said they have moved off social media entirely to zine making, and that the previous sentiment could not resound more with them these days.
So there is a thread here. From a big AI flight test, through policy fights and security failures, to this quiet idea that making things matters even when nobody is watching.
That idea, that creating does not need to scale, is a counterweight to a lot of what we have talked about today. And it seems to resonate with people who are stepping back from the platforms that demand an audience.
So there's a fascinating blog post making the rounds titled, "Emacs is a Lisp board." And the core argument is that Emacs functions as a unified, Lisp-powered clipboard.
Right. And it sparked a really interesting philosophical debate in the Hacker News comments. Commenter Benimaho framed it as a choice between many single-purpose apps versus one super app.
And they're speaking from experience. They say they turned Tmux into an integrated utility hub themselves, but they point out that maintaining super apps is harder because of tight coupling between the pieces.
Which is the classic trade-off, right? Then, commenter Dieter1Purse1, who pushed back and said, building a consistent experience from isolated tools is actually even harder.
And they gave a concrete example. They praised Spacemax as discoverable, extendable, and quite consistent, suggesting that a well-built integrated environment can solve that consistency problem better than a pile of separate tools.
Now here's a practical problem that affects real users right now. ChatGPT business accounts, the ones upgraded from personal accounts, don't offer the same easy data export that personal or enterprise accounts provide.
So if you upgraded your personal account to a business plan, you might find yourself stuck when you want to get your data out.
Exactly. A developer named Conrad Kick ran into this and built a free tool called Scrapamy Chats to extract that data.
The tool is specifically designed to fill that gap. It gets your chat data out when the official export path just isn't there for business accounts that started as personal ones.
It's worth noting that enterprise accounts do have proper data export, and so do standard personal accounts. This is really about that in-between space where someone upgraded and lost the export feature along the way.
This next one is alarming. A Hacker News user reports that Namecheap gave away his account to an unverified third party simply because they asked.
and this was a long-term customer. He'd been with Namecheap for 13 years. He registered a .com domain for a college club under his own name, his own address, and his own phone number.
So during a leadership transition at the club, the incoming lead tried a password reset using just the domain name. The original user filed a support ticket right away, saying he didn't initiate it.
Namecheap gave him a verification call and then sent canned security tips. That was it. Meanwhile, the club lead called Namecheap separately, convinced them the domain belonged to his club, and then Namecheap changed the account password and the email address.
With no verification or validation. They just handed over the account. No identity check on the person requesting the change. No confirmation with the registered owner.
The registered owner's name, address, and phone number were all there on the account. None of that stopped Namecheap from transferring it to someone who simply asked.
Let's close out with something called Echo. It's an experiment that pools open-weight models like GLM-5.2 and KIMI-K2.7 instead of relying on a single model.
The idea is that for each request, the system decides how much computation to allocate, which models should participate, and how their work should be combined.
Some prompts need only a small amount of inference, while others benefit from more. Echo tries to make that call dynamically.
They tested a hypothetical setup that knew in advance which models would be useful and how to combine their outputs. That Oracle setup performed substantially better than any individual model in the pool.
Echo's goal is to recover some of that advantage without having that advanced knowledge of which decisions are good ones.
The creator describes the result as fable-level performance at roughly one-third the cost. That's the claim, and it's built entirely on open-weight models, so people can go check it out.
A new report from the European Southern Observatory suggests astronomers may have spotted the first exomoon, a moon orbiting a planet outside our solar system.
This came in through a Hacker News submission from a user named Marco Dewey, and the discussion that followed was a pretty entertaining mix of genuine excitement and some very Hacker News sidebar observations.
Right? Alongside the reactions to the possible discovery itself, people also zeroed in on the ESO website's design details. One commenter specifically noted an 8-pixel left margin on the Chilean flag graphic, which, I suppose, is the kind of thing you notice when you are a certain kind of reader.
And a clarification popped up in the thread, too, because not everyone knows what ESO actually is. It is the European Southern Observatory, an intergovernmental organization established back in 1962, supported by 16 member states plus host country Chile and strategic partners. So a serious scientific institution, and apparently one with a website that invites close inspection.
The exomoon itself, if confirmed, would be a big deal. We have cataloged thousands of exoplanets, but confirming a moon around one of them has stayed just out of reach. So this report, even at this early stage, is generating real interest.
And the Hacker News discussion reflects that. The community there tends to dig into the substance, but also into the details around the edges. The flag margin note is almost a tradition at this point.
Switching over to something a lot closer to home, starting from the end of August 2026, UK households will be able to install plug-in balcony solar panels without needing permission from landlords or energy suppliers. That is according to The Guardian.
So the idea is you could essentially hang a panel off your balcony rail, plug it into a standard socket, and start generating your own electricity. The UK change removes a regulatory hurdle that made it hard for renters and apartment dwellers to participate in solar at all.
And in the United States, the picture is more of a patchwork. It is already legal in some places. Utah is one example. And bills to legalize plug-in solar are appearing in state legislatures around the country.
Virginia's legislature recently passed a related measure, and a similar bill was under consideration in Washington state. So the momentum seems to be building, but there is no single national policy yet.
The balcony solar model has already taken off in parts of Europe, especially Germany, where it is sometimes called balcony power plants. The UK change brings it in line with that trend, and the U.S. state-level bills suggest the idea is crossing the Atlantic in pieces.
For anyone in an apartment or a rental who has wanted solar but could not get approval, these policy shifts could open a door that was previously locked, sometimes literally by a landlord or a utility rulebook.
That is all the time we have for today. We covered a lot, from a family paying over $800,000 for an experimental gene therapy that ended in tragedy, to founders pushing back against possible restrictions on Chinese AI models.
We also talked about how major AI companies may be hiding huge amounts of debt off their books, and the International Mathematical Union accidentally publishing the 2026 Fields Medal winners early.
Plus an AI-piloted F-16, a Namecheap account handed over to a stranger who simply asked, and why people are still publishing online even when they are not chasing influence.
And the UK is letting households install plug-in balcony solar panels without permission starting late 2026. We are back with another episode soon. Thanks for listening.